Mini episode 275 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 275 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We have a tremendous panel today. We are going to be discussing the TV upfronts for 2013, the very recent unveiling of programs by the major networks, also the cable networks, and the new fronts as well, as new media has gotten in on the party, particularly in the last 2 years or so. We'll be discussing this with two of our favorite people to talk TV with. First of all, good friend of the show, one of our FDH Lounge dignitary cast members, as a matter of fact, and a member of the 21st Century Media Alliance along with us, Simon Applebaum of Tomorrow Will Be Televised, also joining us, is a very honored guest that we've had on a couple of occasions as well on the program. Looking forward to talking to him again, Mark Berman of TV Media Insights. So very happy to welcome with us here today on mini episode 275, Simon Applebaum and Mark Berman. Gentlemen, so pleased to have you both on here to talk TV today. How are you guys?
Excellent. Thank you, Rick. And it's always great to be with Mark. He's been on my program a number of times, and he is by far the Plumbing Insider, one of the best.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I always enjoy talking about television.
Well, this is going to be a real catnip for people who love the industry, getting to have both of you guys on the program. Not a surprise to me that you two have broadcast with one another before, but the first time with you two together on this show, and a real pleasure, as I say. In terms of the TV lineups for the fall that were unveiled, starting with the network side of it, taking a look there. Start with you, Simon. It seems like there's a lot of basically stasis from a year ago, not a whole lot of shows that debuted that were unveiled at about this time last year that made a huge impact. Who's up, who's down on the network side? Largely the same as a year ago. In your estimation, how did that shape this year's upfronts?
I think all five of the major broadcast networks, Rick, are going into this coming year at pivot points, where I think by this time next year, CBS may not be the number one network. NBC could be either up or down, ABC up or down, Fox up or down. There's so many factors in play. But the bottom line is that maybe for the first time in the history of the medium and the history of us viewers, any one of these five networks could go any which way. In the case of CBS, I think they developed some flaws in their schedule. The Monday night lineup, which used to be one of the great bastions of their schedule, is now maybe in tatters because of Dancing with the Stars and The Voice. They're replacing three of their shows, including Hawaii Five-0, moving that to Friday nights, moving a new show in. Two of the sitcoms that run from 8 to 10 are being replaced. In the case of ABC, some of the things like Nashville did not work out as initially advertised, although I think Connie Britton's performance should definitely be up for an Emmy Award nomination. With NBC, it was basically two shows that started the year, Sunday Night Football and The Voice, and then we saw The Emperor with No Clothes. And I'm not certain where NBC is going to go. It's been a disastrous 2013 so far for that network. CW, crazy schedule. It gets away with being the network with the abysmal ratings, but they may have two of the most interesting shows to come on this fall. And then you have Fox, which American Idol continues to decline. It did not do well this year. That show is in disarray. Who knows what's going to happen? And unfortunately, their effort to do comedies ran into a buzzsaw when on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock to 10, you had three networks doing comedies at the same time, and they all bombed.
Yeah, that's quite a picture there, yeah, and it's hard to believe that three networks going head-to-head in that genre, that you wouldn't have at least one winner out of the bunch. Mark, that's a very fluid picture that Simon painted there heading into this season. Do you concur, at least in the case of NBC, as far as how they could go up or go down? I'm not sure that a network that got lapped by a Spanish network in the February sweeps could possibly go down much further than they are, but what are your thoughts on the matter?
Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing about NBC because last fall, and, you know, one of the things I do is I crunch ratings for a living. And last fall, NBC had Sunday Night Football and they had The Voice. And suddenly, NBC seemed like it had tremendous momentum because it was the first fall season that it did have The Voice and it was doing extremely well for them. So everybody was writing that NBC was up and NBC was doing well and NBC is on the plus side and so on and so on. And then football season ended. The Voice took a break, and NBC plummeted. So the moral of that story is one single show or two single shows can turn around an entire network, but you can't be a complete network on the basis of Sunday Night Football and The Voice. Now, I personally think CBS is a lock once again in total viewers. They win it every year. I don't think that's going to change next season, but what was very disappointing this season, more than anything else, was the fact that, in my opinion, it was the worst track record for new programming for a season that I've ever seen. I mean, the show everybody is touting as the big hit was The Following on Fox, which it did relatively well, but it was not a big hit. Nothing resonated. CBS really did not have anything new that worked. I mean, it brought back Elementary, but that's not exactly a hit. But I do think CBS will ultimately win the season in total viewers again. And Fox's big problem, of course, is declining American Idol. No matter who they put on the show next season, it's not going to stop the bleeding. And, you know, there had to come a time when American Idol was going to start fading. And then, of course, you know, ABC has an aggressive schedule. They have some good moves. They have some bad moves. And as Simon said, the CW gets away with low ratings, and they get away with their low ratings by going out there and claiming that they are the network that, you know, the DVR usage is huge. They have social buzz. They have the most tweets. They have all that. But they need to back up their claims with some social media data. But they get away with it. And I don't see a lot of positives on the CW next season.
Well, that would continue a long string of seasons where that's been said about them. But as far as it goes, before I get back to a broader question, I'd like to ask both of you a narrower question since we've talked about both Sunday Night Football and American Idol thus far. And I see a parallel here in the sense that I have long kind of looked at it that American Idol, to me, always was a franchise that was at the level of what I would say football for chicks, that it has that same kind of fanatical following among the female gender, really, that the football programming does among the male gender. It's not that no women watch football, and it's not that no men watch American Idol, but I always kind of looked at it that way. And the way that they've been breaking apart the last couple of years ratings-wise, I just wonder in terms of perceived staleness of having been on the air? Has it been a turnover with the judges that's driven people away, other similar competition shows being out there? So in other words, in your sense, is it inevitable that this has happened, or is it sort of a self-induced failing? Simon, we'll start with you.
I think, Rick, it's a bit self-induced. I mean, a lot of the buzz about American Idol this year was about how the judges were going back and forth with each other. It wasn't about the contestants. And that's the thing that's made American Idol, I think, the competition's been for over a decade. It's been able to make stars. It made a star of Kelly Clarkson. It made a star of Ruben Stoddard. It made a star of Jennifer Hudson. It made a star of Phillip Phillip. And that's the one advantage, by the way, that show has over The Voice on NBC. In 2 years, The Voice has not come up with a single star. It gets by because of the format. It gets by because it's fascinating to watch. It's well done. But American Idol this year, I think everyone, Fox was pinning on Nicki Minaj and Mariah Carey to make good. It turned out to be Battle Royale with the judges. Of course, Simon Cowell is now on X Factor. And it got away from what it's supposed to be all about, which is making stars, making musical personalities out of talents we don't know about and giving them that national platform. And if American Idol has any chance to reverse its ratings decline, it's got to get back on the fundamental, which is make stars. Give us great personalities, give us great musical talent, and let them fly.
Very intriguing points on that, certainly. Mark, from your perspective, poring over the metrics as much as you do on a regular basis, what's your sense with American Idol? Self-induced, inevitable, or maybe a little bit of both?
A little bit of both, and here's why. You know, first of all, it's 12 years old, American Idol, so at some point, you know, at some point you're going to lose steam. And remember that when you're a show that in its heyday was doing close to 30 million viewers a week, there really is only one place to go, and that is down. So, you know, but here was the issue with American Idol. I think the big mistake that Fox made, here was the problem. You know, two seasons ago, Fox came out with The X Factor, and they, you know, Simon Cowell left American Idol. He was going to The X Factor, and he boldly said that if The X Factor does not bring in 20 million viewers per week, it's not a hit show. Well, guess what? It didn't bring in 20 million viewers. It brought in about 12. On paper, that looks like a relatively good number. That's a solid performance. The demo was decent, but it wasn't a blockbuster. And I think ultimately Simon left. The chemistry started changing. People started getting tired of it, and I don't think, you know, Fox needed to have a singing competition in both the fall and in mid-season. I think the beauty of American Idol was it always came back in January. They didn't have a singing competition in the fall, and people looked forward to it. So I think it was too much. At the same time, they didn't take a break, Fox. And if I was the network, in a perfect world, what I would have done, and this is not a perfect world, so they're not doing it, what I would have done was I would have said, we're going to not bring back the X Factor. Let's see if we can get Simon Cowell back on American Idol. Let's keep Randy on it. Let's bring Paula back. And let's get the three of them back and do one final last hurrah of American Idol. Let it go out in style. But that's not the way this business works. They're going to bleed it to the very end. It doesn't matter if they bring in Jennifer Hudson as one of the judges or any of the other former contestants as rumored. But, you know, American Idol, even if it slips 10 to 20% next season, that'll still be good enough to keep it on the air. So in my long-winded answer to your question was it was a combination of, you know, 12 years on the air and Fox being too greedy. That's what it was.
And by the way, there's something else to sort of turn it to the voice, to flip it. If you've noticed in the recent ratings, the last couple of weeks, a very interesting thing has happened. First, the voice ratings have started to slip. The performance show on Monday night actually was down in the ratings from what it was a year ago. NBC might want to take a look and say, you know what, let's just do The Voice one time a year. Let's not do it twice a year. And Dancing with the Stars, by the way, may also go that route too, where rather than doing two series a year, they go one set of episodes a year. The other thing is that Telemundo now has a show called La Voice Kids. It's a children's version of The Voice in Spanish. It's running on Telemundo Sunday nights from 8 to 10. It is the highest rated series that network has ever had. It's now getting upwards of 2 million viewers a shot. The buzz is tremendous, and I have to think some people at NBC got to be shaking their heads and wondering, why did we let this get away from us? Why didn't we do a children's version of The Voice Kids on Sunday nights on our network? Why did we let it go to El Mundo? And incidentally,
you know,
go ahead, Mark.
No, I just want to interject a second. The one thing you have to remember about The Voice, the reason why the numbers are coming down now, last year at this time, The Voice, the season was over. NBC extended it into the middle of June, and when you get into June, your hot levels are dropping. And last year, NBC made the mistake of putting America's Got Talent during the traditional season. It's brought it back in May, and that hurt it. So I think NBC figured we'll extend The Voice into the middle of June, and that's going to keep the momentum going. What they didn't realize was you have lower hot levels, less people watching television, and that's going to negatively impact the ratings. But I still personally think that The Voice is the hot singing competition, and it will remain that way in the fall. What I don't like about NBC right now is they have now another singing competition, Monday at 10, called The Winner Is. You know, at some point, you have to kind of take a step back and say, enough already, you know?
Mm-hmm. And also, they may have to think about The Voice being a great lead-in to shows at 10 o'clock, because we found this spring that was not the case. The shows that The Voice went out of did not do well in the ratings. And also, another thing NBC has to deal with now is Revolution. When that show came on Monday night at 10 o'clock last fall, it was a hit show. Obviously, The Voice helped. But then NBC made the lost mistake that ABC made a couple years ago of, we're going to take this show off. We're going to kill the momentum for 3 or 4 months. And Revolution has not been the same since. And on top of that, NBC is now going to put that show on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. I'm going to make a quick prediction. NBC has got to bring that show back to 10, or else that show flunks.
Well, you know, what's interesting about Revolution is, you know, people on paper, everybody called it a hit show, but you're right, Simon. It lost a lot of audience out of The Voice, but if it didn't have The Voice lead-in, it would have completely tanked the way Deception did when Revolution was on hiatus. Wednesday at 8 o'clock is a death sentence, totally.
Yeah, that's a tough place to be sure. In terms of looking at what might be this year's, I wouldn't say this year's revolution, because I think that anything that's any shows that are aiming to be hits are going to aim a little bit higher than that. I'm afraid to something that would be an unambiguous hit. Wondering if either of you guys see anything on the horizon here. You've got some big names coming back to TV, whether it be Robin Williams or Sean Hayes. You've got a show in the Goldbergs that looks like it's got a pretty talented cast. We'll have to see if the writing can live up to that. Some high concept stuff from ABC with their new superhero show, The Shield. A lot of different interesting possibilities here on the lineups this fall. Start with you, Simon. Any instinct you have on any of these shows possibly breaking out?
I think the Michael J. Fox show on NBC has a possibility, but not the way it is being scheduled now. I saw the clip at NBC's Upfront at Racy Music Hall. I like the cast. I like the way the show may be going. Fox is terrific. I'm happy that he plays an anchor. I'm happy that the whole thing with Parkinson's disease, which he's dealing with in real life, is a point, but it's not the big point, the focal point of the show. The problem with the Michael J. Fox show is it is on at 9:30 on Thursday night, after two other sitcoms, and the night leads off with Parks and Recreation, which should not be on the air this year. If I was Bob Greenblatt, the head of NBC, my first call right now would be to put the Michael J. Fox show on at 8 o'clock on Thursday night. If it is not on, leave that night off. I would think the American public would love to see Michael J. Fox lead off Thursday night, and I think that might have a great shot against the Big Bang Theory on CBS. If Michael J. Fox goes on the way it is going on now, 9:30 on Thursday night, it will not work. In terms of other shows on the drama side, I'm fascinated by two shows on the CW. One of them is a revival of a revival. It's The Tomorrow People. In the 1990s, this show, which originally was developed by the BBC, it was a children's fantasy series, fantasy sci-fi, got a great run on Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon then revived the show for a teenage audience in the 1990s, and now it's being done by two top producers, Greg Berlanti and Julie Plec, for the CW, aimed at the millennial 20-something crowd. And I was very impressed with the production value. I think the concept is terrific. If it works for Nickelodeon, I think this thing could work for the CW. And the scheduling of it, I think, could also work in its favor. Going, I believe it's on after Arrow, which was the CW hit of this year. The other show, which is on Thursday night, so I think has a good chance to work, is Rain, the Mary Queen of Scots Venture. It's different. It's historical. I like the woman who plays the lead role. That might be the sleeper.
Well, those are two very interesting ones as far as the demographics that they're aiming at and the way that they're trying to do it. Mark, what's your sense? It looks to be a very eclectic lineup this fall as far as new shows go. Now, I say that, and again, you know, memory is short. We all tend to be prisoners of the moment. Maybe you could say the same thing about last year, but I'm seeing a lot of different things here. Yeah, when you look at a name like Michael J. Fox coming back, who's not even one of the ones that I mentioned, that just really adds to it as well as far as networks going any number of directions, but a lot of times trying to stay true to the names that they think can deliver the ratings. So what do you think are going to be the best paths towards ratings for the new shows this fall?
Well, I'll start by saying, you know, it's very interesting because somebody just asked me the other day, do I think some of the big names are really going to ignite the fall schedule? I don't think it's about the names of the people. I don't think it's about the caliber of the talent. I think it's about the show itself. I think it's about the premise, the writing, all that stuff. And if it's a good enough show, then hopefully it finds an audience. I'm going to start with the one show that has the best time period of the new crop that is a shoo-in to rank in the top 10. It can't miss, is The Millers. Now, the disadvantage of airing out of The Big Bang Theory is you have a tremendous lead, and so the expectations are high. But I like the pilot. I thought it looked familiar. I thought it was funny. And I think it's going to click out of The Big Bang Theory. So that's one new show that I think is going to work. I want to go over to Mom on CBS Monday at 9:30. You know, it's Chuck Lorre. It's that typical Chuck Lorre humor. It airs out of Two Broke Girls, which did lose a lot of steam this season, but I think it's compatible. I think that has a very good shot. I have to go to NBC, 10 o'clock on Monday, The Blacklist. I think that will perform similarly to Revolution, and because it airs out of The Voice, it will get a demo performance. It's going to lose a lot of steam out of the voice, but I think it'll do well enough, as Revolution did, to stay on the air. I really like the Goldbergs on ABC. I don't like where it's scheduled. I think it makes sense to put the Goldbergs after Modern Family on Wednesday, because it's one family leading into another. Everyone is very optimistic about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think that will bring in a solid young adult audience opposite NCIS. I don't think it's going to have a tremendous total viewer base, like everyone seems to think, but I think that definitely has a shot. And Michael J. Fox, you know, look, NBC Thursday is a graveyard. You're not going to go from 4 million viewers for one show to 12 million. It's not going to happen, but because it's buried at 9:30 out of, Simon, like Simon said, two new comedies, I think the expectations are low, and I think that has a shot. And what I really like about the schedule, I have to be honest, unlike last fall, I think there are a lot of shows, or a number of shows, that stand a good chance of working. And I have to point to the Tomorrow People. Like Simon said, I think that's going to work well out of Arrow. But personally, I think Rain is going to collapse. I think viewers are going to look at the show on the CW. They're going to think, I don't recognize this historical piece, and I think they're going to flee. And I also think, and this is very strange, or very sad, actually, while I predict the Millers on CBS out of the Big Bang Theory is going to be a big hit, I think the Crazy Ones at 9 o'clock with Robin Williams is going to be a disaster. I think it's going to get sampled. People are going to not like what they see, and I think they're going to flee. So I think CBS is going to have to fix 9 o'clock on Thursday. And remember, Mike and Molly is waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Mark is pointing to something very important with is it, there's two things that also deal very powerfully with how a television schedule goes. One is execution, and the other is where a show is placed. You can have a great cast, you can have a great premise, but if it's not well executed, audience does not have a shot to find it. And then, of course, it's also scheduling. And one of the things that has helped CBS become and stay the number one network for years was not only the new shows it introduced, but also where it placed shows to revitalize them, moving The Big Bang Theory from Monday night to Thursday night, where it's flourished. Two and a Half Men, same thing a year or two ago. Survivor going from Thursday night to Wednesday night. That is going to be put to the test this year. They're moving Hawaii Five-0 from where it was going neck and neck with Castle on ABC on Monday night to Friday night. They're moving other shows to other nights. And I'm not certain whether we're going to see whether CBS still has the magic in terms of putting shows in different time periods and making them even bigger successes.
Yeah, that is a real leap of faith, no question about it. Switching to the cable side, taking a look ahead to the fall season with some of the things that were unveiled at the upfronts. And Simon, starting with you, I'd like you also somewhere in your discussion to touch upon this new UBC network, and I understand that they're going to be having a very excellent show about TV and technology on there.
Yes, that's a little bit of what we call the subtle reference to one of your
yes.
guests in a show. And I'll get to that in a little bit. But I think two things. Number one, you're going to see more networks getting into scripted television and expanding scripted television than ever before, whether it's sci-fi, whether it's USA, whether it's TBS, TNT, et cetera. Cable networks are now saying we've got to compete with the with the broadcasts on a year-round schedule. We've got to do more scripted. You're going to see more networks, believe it or not, and rejuvenating networks get on. The second half of the year is going to be amazing. August, we've got Pivot, the new network aimed at millennials and participant media, the launch of Fox Sports One. We've got in September, G4 becomes Esquire Network. We've got Rob Rodriguez with El Rey in December. We've got maybe Sean Combs' music service, Revolt, which was supposed to go on the air in January, then July. It's become sort of the AWOL television network. We're still waiting for somebody to tell us when it's going to go. We hear October is the latest. And Bravo's going to get into scripted TV. Next month, Hallmark Channel gets in. So you're going to see a lot more energy in terms of scripted television. One show which I'm pretty excited about on sci-fi is Helix, the new show from Ron Moore, the man who championed Battlestar Galactica, made it a Peabody and Emmy-nominated show. I think this show is a winner. I understand sci-fi is going to schedule it in a good time period on Monday night or Friday night. I think this is definitely one to watch, and I think Bravo may have one in the hopper. They're getting the scripted TV. They say they're going to do it, and they have one show that is coming out called Rita, which I think could be a winner based on casting and based on the premise.
Well, Mark,
just to let you know, there's a network of diversity. It's a network aimed at the whole urban broadcasting scene, and yours truly is going to be doing either a half-hour version of my current Blog Talk radio show, Tomorrow Be Televised, or I'll be doing reports for a project called Urban Access Entertainment. Think of it as entertainment tonight for the diversity crowd and for the urban audience. And by the way, another big story of this whole broadcast and cable upfront season, more diversity. It looks like the networks have really got it, got the message that you have to have people of color in front of and behind the camera. 40% of the country is people of color, and if they're not reflecting the shows you watch, people are not going to watch your network. And that's
absolutely. And certainly the UBC network that you talked about there, the new one, certainly stands as a good example of that. Mark, in terms of some of the things that Simon was talking about there, again, it sounds like a lot of change coming this fall, both in terms of the scripted programs, but he mentioned with Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2. I'm also thinking in my head FX splitting up into the two different channels. So would it be correct to say that we're looking at a greater year of change ahead in the cable and satellite channel realm than we've seen in the last couple of years?
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely. And you know what's very good about cable, you know, I've mentioned this for several years. You know, I've always made the statement that, you know, cable really steps up to the plate right after Memorial Day. The broadcast networks, you know, are known to have the Gone Fishing sign up, and the audience tends to go right over to cable in the summer. But little by little, over the past number of years, the cable networks have inched more into the traditional season. They're becoming more 12-month programmers than just focusing on the summer. And on the flip side, what's interesting is if you look at the broadcast networks this summer, they're trying to be more aggressive with some original programming in the summer. So it's not easy to kind of recondition an audience to watch when you think there's not going to be anything on. But cable is definitely more aggressive. There's definitely more original product during the year. And, you know, remember, you have to remember about cable, what's different about cable versus the broadcast networks. The broadcast networks, the big three, ABC, CBS, and NBC, they're programming 22 hours a week. That's a lot of programming to put on the air, and I think the biggest obstacle the broadcast networks face is that the majority of the new product all launches on that third week of September. Cable doesn't have the same rules. They don't have to have as much new product. They don't have to do as many original episodes, and they could, you know, kind of spread it out throughout the year, and that is totally benefiting them because if you ask anybody off the street, stop someone off the street and ask that person, and I ask people all the time, what are you watching on the air now? More often than not, you're going to hear a cable show. You're going to hear The Walking Dead. You're going to hear about all, you know, on any the other AMC shows, the FX stuff. So cable has definitely made inroads. There's new networks coming up. There's more original product. But not to knock the broadcast networks, I am more optimistic about their schedules coming up in the fall. I love the fact that a lot of the low-rated series were finally canceled. I agree about Parks and Recreation. That needs to go. But I think cable has really done a very, very good job being more aggressive, and it is benefiting them. And I'll say one more thing. Look at Dallas, for example, on TNT. It launched last summer. It had, you know, it did well. TNT was aggressive. They brought it back during the traditional season. There was more competition. The ratings kind of came down, but it showed the audience that, you know, we are being aggressive, and it's working. It's slowly but surely working, and it's very exciting, actually.
And, Mark, something you've just pointed to, the networks, you go to Sci-Fi, you go to FX, you go to HBO, you go to Starz. Everybody is getting more and more and more ambitious. You look at the development slate
right.
of every network and
right.
AMC, Starz. You are seeing more talent from the film world getting involved. You are seeing more unique players getting involved in terms of production companies. You're seeing reality production companies getting to scripted TV. The plots, it's no longer the cop show, the medical show, the legal show. It's historical drama. It's science fiction. It's contemporary drama. It's all over the map, and that is a great thing. If you are a television show creator producer, you are having the time of your life because you can go all over the place. You just pick your network, and you'll find the network that wants to take your product. Even smaller networks like BYU TV, Blue Highway Television, are getting into the scripted game, and they're making inroads. Plus, we better say it now, you also have Netflix. You also have Hulu. You also have
right.
Amazon. And because of smart TVs, which may end up being one of the major stories and technology developments of this decade and maybe this century, people are now watching web content, not just web videos, but web content on their television set. And now you've got Netflix, as we saw yesterday, DreamWorks Animation is going to produce 300 hours of original animated programming over the next couple of years, just for that deal. Netflix wants to outdo every network in town, and people see that's a way to go. Amazon is a way to go. Hulu is a way to go. We can watch it on television, and that is, I think, going to force everybody to up their game in terms of the kinds of programming they showcase.
Well, that's totally a great point. You anticipated my next point there, Simon. So I wanted to ask you guys about the quote-unquote new fronts, but as far as how new media has been involved in the upfronts in the last year or two, you mentioned a lot of optimistic things there about the future of web programming, Simon. And, again, I go back. One of the many segments I did with you over a period of time was the one that we did at the beginning of the decade, trying to anticipate the next decade of TV and technology. We're about a third of the way through right now. I have a sense at the moment we're looking at a little bit of a period of retrenchment, maybe that the pendulum is coming back the other way. I don't know if I'm correct in that or not, but you've got the very ambitious project that Google had with the 100 premium YouTube channels. Now it seems that they're putting more of a bet on subscription channels rather than all the money they threw at the ones that went out there originally. You've got that. You've got Larry King now making his deal with the Russian network, trying to get back on traditional cable and satellite as opposed to just putting all of his bets on new media. So do you have a sense that because it's been so slow to be able to be monetized, that there is a little bit of a period of retrenchment, or am I making a little too much out of that, Simon?
I don't think it's as much retrenchment, Rick, as it is the fact that digital websites are still having a tough time making their case about programming. And one of the issues with the new fronts has been that when these new fronts happen, I'm talking about the events themselves, they are not working as well as they could be. The big problem is that with a typical upfront event, you as an advertiser or you as an advertising agency know, here's the shows that are coming your way this summer, this fall, this winter from X network or Y network and when they are going to premiere. You don't know that when you see AOL or Yahoo or Hulu or somebody else give their presentation. You are left in the dark, and that is a big, big problem. Some people want to deny it. I thought YouTube's upfront this year, which unfortunately the press did not get a chance to go to, was a disaster. Because they did not introduce anything new, because they didn't talk about what they've got coming up, they didn't showcase their programming in a format, even though they had a great place, a venue to do it, and what are you left with as an advertiser agency? You don't have anything to work with. If you don't know what shows are coming up and when they're going on the air, apart from the kind of shows they're going to do, you don't have a clue. You can't work with it. And I think it's a lesson that every participant in this digital content new front has to do. Remember also that press is very important too. And one of the mistakes that was made with the new fronts this year, it wasn't as much last year, but this year it was that the press really could not go to a lot of these new fronts because the Interactive Ad Bureau unfortunately had the press go to individual companies to get the new fronts, and a lot of them did not respond. Remember, these events now are not just for the ad industry. They are for the media. They're for the public. It's CBS's or NBC or HBO or ESPN's way of letting you, the public, know here's where we stand, here's our framework of the network, here's where we're going, here's what you can expect, and that's a big thing. It's really because these upfront events, what we're talking about is they've become a major way, a major communications tool to tell the public here's where we are as a network and here's where we're going. And if you can't, as a website, tell that story and tell it effectively, you're not going to get advertising.
That is very, very true. Now, Mark, I know that your media property is more focused on traditional broadcasting, network, cable, satellite, et cetera, but I'm sure you probably have some thoughts on this as well, on the migration of programming to new media and how fast that seems to be happening. Again, the challenges of monetization of the medium really seem to be really causing a lot of people to go into brain lock right about now as far as how you transcend that and, you know, what can be done on that. Do you get the sense, Mark, that this is a period of really great challenge for new media properties?
Yes. It's a lot of challenge. And, you know, here's the obstacle that I personally face, and it's very frustrating. You know, and I'm going to backtrack a second. You know, many years ago when I first started writing a column, and that was in 1999, and I remember I started crunching the overnight ratings on the broadcast networks when nobody else was doing them. So I would come in, and I still do that, by the way, but I would come in the morning, on, let's say, tomorrow. Tomorrow's Wednesday, so I go in and I'm going to tell you what happened last night on the broadcast networks. Then later in the morning, I get the FAST affiliate numbers, which will have the total viewers and the demographics, so I can give you an update of what's happening. The obstacle that we face in this business in terms of all this new digital product and everything online, we don't know how these shows are doing. We don't know who's watching. We don't know what the numbers look like. We don't know. We just don't know. And we have to have a way to report this. We need to see data. We need to have people like me reporting this and educating the community in terms of what's working and what's not working. And what's very frustrating for me is when I go to an upfront presentation like the CW, and I'm not picking on them, I'm just being honest, and they're making claims that they have all this, you know, online buzz and tweeting and this and that. You have to back up your claims with the data so we could report that. You just can't make a blanket statement. So, you know, with Larry King, for example, the deal that he made, we're not going to know who's watching. We're not going to know how he's doing. So that has to change. That needs to change, and, you know, we need to have data to represent that. But look, you know, it's a very different business than it was even just a few years ago. I don't have to watch TV when it's on. I don't have to watch TV on TV. I could do it in other ways. But no matter what's going to happen, no matter how many innovations we have over the years, the best way to still watch television is on your television set. That's always going to be the bread and butter of the business. Everything else is an addition. But it's challenging, but it's also exciting. And it's changing. And we need more of the data to support what exactly is going on, because anyone making blanket statements without providing the data, it's just not, you know, it's not reasonable. So that's the challenge that I personally face with all of this.
Absolutely.
And we really know, what these shows are all about. And you have to really have an effective message. Going back to the New Front, I thought AOL had some very interesting shows that they are putting on the air, but they had all these celebrities who basically gave backstories themselves rather than talk about, here's the show I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and then run a clip. You've got to have a really good message and stay on that message and let people know, this is our network, this is our service, here's what we're doing, here's what's coming up, here's what you expect and when, so that you have something to work with. And I totally agree with Mark. We have to find a way, some sort of rating system, some sort of credible way of knowing not only who's watching, but how many people are watching, similar to what Nielsen has, or better.
I'm also going to take it one step further. Here's another issue that we face. Okay. You know, going back to cable for a second, I don't have the same immediacy in terms of getting the data for cable, so a lot of the information that I receive is basically a cable network sending me highlights. They're not going to send me anything negative. They're only going to send me the positives. And what's happening is the minute something is out there, it's tweeted, it's on Facebook, it's everywhere, and that's what's being reported. That's not a valid way to report it. And what I started doing way back when was I would crunch the overnight numbers, I would look at the competition, I would look at the lead, and I would look at the, you know, recent time period. I'd put in all the benchmarks, and then this is a winner and this is a loser. So I think we've kind of lost our grip in terms of what is considered a hit and what is considered a miss. I mean, the definition has changed. You have a show like Arrested Development, ran on Fox for 2.5 years, could not survive on Fox, didn't do well enough. But yet, you know, where it is now, they bring it back and they put it on Netflix, and suddenly, you know, everybody's talking about it again, but we don't know how it's doing. How is it doing? So I think the definition has changed. I think the way that we report in this business has changed. I think we have to kind of go back to the old school a little bit and get the information, write about it accordingly, utilize, you know, various benchmarks, and that's how you report it, not taking a press release and tweeting it, because that's not the way to do it. But it all goes down to that same issue of getting, you know, the kind of information we need to really adequately report on this. It's very difficult. It's very challenging. You don't know exactly what's a hit or a miss anymore. The whole definition has changed.
And by the way, another very interesting thing to keep an eye out this fall is there's going to be some very interesting developments in the area of news and information programming. We've got the coming of Fusion, the ABC News Univision joint venture, which is going to be a news and lifestyle plumbing service. There's a network called One America News Network out of Washington and Well TV, long-running, high-definition, independent television channel is going to do. And I should also point out we have Al Jazeera America, which is going to be the redone Current TV that's going to be set up here in the United States. So, and, of course, we also have changes at CNN, including the New Day program that premiered yesterday. And by the way, I have a little thought. Should we not review New Day after a day or two on the air? Let the show run for a couple of months, and then let's review how it's doing, how it's going. You know, I'm reminded of the fact that a year and a half ago, that happened with CBS This Morning. And I got news for you. CBS This Morning is a pretty darn good program. It is really shaped up, and it is gaining audience. And it would have gained an audience if you even thought the reviews that came out like the day of the show or the day after the first newscast came on. Give these newscasts or news networks a break, and let's review them 3 months after the fact once they get into a rhythm, not a day or two after they go on the air.
That's a very good point, to be sure. And it goes to this whole thing about instant judgment that we're in, and to Mark's point also about how you measure audiences. I mean, we're at, I think, to bring it full circle, I've been saying this for a while, we're sort of at this years-long hinge in history. At a certain point in time, Simon, the world that you talk about with Tomorrow Will Be Televised, people will listen to this years from now and look back and they'll laugh and they'll say, hey, what, you're going to tell me there wasn't a time when you could see the same things on your TV and on your tablet and everything. But again, we'll get to that point of integration, but it's a very fitful process between here and there. And in many ways, that's what makes it so interesting. And it is always, always tremendous to have a discussion with you two guys. I really appreciate having you both on. I promised at the outset that this would be epic, and it certainly was, certainly lived up to that. Simon Applebaum of Tomorrow Will Be Televised and Mark Berman of TV Media Insights. Thank you guys both so much. Look forward to talking to you again, hopefully sometime soon.
It's
You're
a
welcome. Have
Thanks,
a good
Rick.
One.
Thank you, Mark. Always being great.
Same here. Take care.
You too.
Excellent.
Bye.
Thank you both, gentlemen. And thank you all for
You're
joining
welcome.
Us for FDH Lounge mini episode number 275.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.